a non-original member of Major League Soccer winning MLS Cup, leading the way out for the Reds right now. That is Michael Bradley, the captain. It's been a good day for the Bradley family already.
Great point.
Dad Bob Bradley back in Wales. Sunderland, can you imagine what an MLS Cup title would be tonight in the Bradley household?
Sportsfeld, we are taking you back to the glory days, the not so distant past, the, as we said a couple times now, we didn't know how good we had it, I think, in 2016. The 2016 Toronto FC Montreal BMO Field miracle in the MLS Eastern Conference Final was the previous episode, and Toronto somehow, some way escaping and advancing to the MLS Cup. I don't know about you. I remember the fact that they were playing an MLS Cup in Toronto in December being a pretty effing big deal at the time.
Yeah, I remember it being sort of the following the Western Conference Finals, because if Colorado had won, it would have not been in Toronto. So it was that like hope of like hoping Seattle would win so we could have the final in Toronto, which is what happened. Because Seattle would win 3-1 on aggregate. And it was, I will say this, I was at this cup final. We talked about this, I think, in the first episode of this story time, that I love BMO Field. I think it's like the best viewing experience in Toronto. I love an outdoor sports stadium. This cup final on December 10th, 2016, is a great argument for all stadiums being indoors. This is the coldest I have ever been at a stadium. It was, weather says it was -5.
BMO
was right on the water. It was not -5.
Boy, oh boy. It's, I'm glad you mentioned you were at this game. I was also at this game. I was at work.
That's right.
This game for Sportsnet, for social. Went to like the supporters bars beforehand. Got some great visuals. Almost got hit by a firework. Dropped my phone in the middle of like a guy's doing the balance. It was crazy. It was a really good time though. But oh my God. It was the coldest. There were two times that I can remember in Toronto where it being like painfully cold outside. And those two times are the MLS Cup final in 2016 and the NBA All-Star game. Do you remember how NBA All-Star
that
weekend in Toronto was like? It was like impossible.
In the
cold
middle
outside.
Of like this beautiful winter. The one weekend that the All-Star was here, it was just shit.
Because it was the MLS Cup final, a little behind the curtain. Obviously, tons of extra media are in town. There was not enough room in the press box for all the different media. So I had to do my work. I was outside. I did not get to go inside basically at any point during this entire match. That's how fans live. So it's totally fine. But I would get my heat from like, they had the little break open hand warmers that you get. They had those in the stadium, and then I would go to the little heat lamps that they have on the concourse. I would do laps.
I will say this about those heat lamps. The place to go to get the heat lamps in BMO Field is the men's bathroom, and I guess the ladies' bathroom as well. I am 5'5", and those heat lamps are on the ceiling. And I will say, as a short person, those heat lamps didn't do much for my very cold hands. The move that I went to was to buy a large coffee and put whiskey in it. And that was how I survived. I will say I was at the 2017 Cup as well. And it was like 15 degrees warmer and I had a way better time.
Yes. absolutely.
I don't want to sound like put Skydome as everything, but like, man, being cold at a sporting event sucks. It sucks.
Too true. A little bit of history. 2016 MLS Cup is the first to feature two expansion teams that were not part of the original clubs from the league's inception. It was the first time since 2008 that both teams were making their first appearance. And the teams had played once during the season. It's a 1-1 draw at BMO Field on July the 2nd.
Huh.
How about that?
Look at that. Facts and things.
Starting lineup. So with this, Toronto goes with Clint Irwin, Eric Zavaleta, Drew Moore, Nick Hagland, Stephen Bateshore. I'm on Armando Cooper, Michael Bradley, Jonathan Osorio, Justin Morrow, Josie Altidore, and number 10, Sebastian Giovinco.
This was one of the most intense games I've ever seen. But not
Stephen Fry in net on the other side.
Stephen Fry, unbelievable in this game. Just like, I guess it's sort of the magic of the beautiful game that just an absolute shit kicking can also be insanely intense and also a loss.
Yes. Brutal. 8:16 Eastern times when the match kicked off. And I'll say this, your point exactly right. It was reported at -5, estimated to be -12 with the wind chill. I still think that still feels about 10 degrees warmer than it actually was.
It was so cold, man. My God.
Toronto in possession the majority of the first half. They ended up actually, to your point about it being sort of a shit kicking, they get 7 chances on goal in the first half. What do you remember about the first half?
I remember it was really frustrating because we were all over them, but it was that weird thing you see in teams in big games, especially if you're a Toronto fan, of like clearly being the better team, but you can feel the tension in the building and in the team. Like it all felt like the building felt tense. And I think the players felt that. And I think the players felt tense and the building felt that. And like every missed chance turned into like agony. But then on the other hand, you look at the game stats and like TFC had 19 shots, 7 on goal. Seattle did not have a shot on goal in this entire game, which was...
That's bananas.
But... But for those stats, it never felt like TFC like had it in the bag, or like it didn't feel inevitable because Stephen Fry was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I to your point, I don't want to jump ahead to the next year, but the next year they are in control and it does sort of feel like a matter of time before they break through. It does not feel that way this year. That's absolutely. Absolutely true. Second half starts out, Giovinco has a good chance and hits the side of the net. And then you see some subs. The rest of the half, not a whole lot. You see some missed passes and Seattle. Basically, the Seattle defense ends up being getting the credit because you can't credit the offense and nobody scores. It's Stephen Fry keeping them in the game.
Yeah, I remember the second half was what felt tense and frustrating. It was a lot of buildup by TFC and not a lot of execution. As I said, they still only had 7 shots on goal, which is not a whole lot, especially with the 19 total shots they had. So it just felt like a lot of, other than a couple like Seba moves, there wasn't a ton, but then it goes to extra time. And then extra time is when things really kicked off.
Yes. In the first half of extra time, Giovinco subs off in the 103rd minute, cramping again for the second time. It's Ricketts again comes in, but it's boy, oh boy, the second half of extra time, Stephen Fry basically earns himself the MVP honors with the big save.
So there's I guess we'll call it like the save, so to speak. If you're familiar with this game, you know what it is. Ricketts makes a great play, great cross for Altidore, who heads it into the opposite corner. Somehow Fry dives, gets his hand on it.
Nicely done by Cheru, played forward now by Bateshore for Ricketts here. Ricketts skips the challenge, stands it up to Altidore. Altidore's header, what a stop from Fry! Stephen Fry robs Josie Altidore.
I was sitting, I guess, in the TFC defensive end at this point. So I was kind of watching the play from across the field. And it felt, I don't know if you felt the same watching it from the press area, but from where I was, it felt like the ball, it's one of the few times I've been at a game where like it feels like slow motion in real life. I was at the Edwin wildcard home run game and I can barely remember it because it's just like a flash and it was just chaos and pandemonium immediately. This is like, I can still remember watching the ball because it's like Josie's header had such arc on it. And it was just like watching it slowly arc through the air. And you could feel you see Ricketts like getting ready to celebrate. And like you could feel the whole building getting ready to celebrate. And then Fry gets his hand on it. And it was just that like, it's the sound of 36,000 people groaning at one time. It's one of the most amazing like in retrospect, it's one of the most amazing athletic feats I've ever seen in person. But at the time, it sucked.
I had actually, so I was doing social, so I was trying to get like good views. But basically, I followed Toronto's offense around the field. As I would set up either the high corner on the one end, or I would go low near behind, basically about behind the supporters when they were in that end, and then for overtime, snuck down and basically snuck into the row where I would have stood years earlier with some friends. So I watched the shootout. This is crazy. I watched the shootout from inside the supporter section, like in the middle of that, rolling my camera the whole time.
Oh,
because I'd never been at a championship game before, but you're my brain is like, get me in with the craziest people and let's get the footage of them winning the fucking MLS Cup in the middle of the scrum. And you get the unbelievable save, which you couldn't have put it better. It happens in slow motion because it's such a given that Josie is scoring this goal.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned it in the previous podcast, one shut him out against Montreal and in the entire playoffs. He was on such a heater, and especially anything in the air, he was absolutely dominant. It was the two places, not to simplify his game, but like, if you could get him a good ball in the air, or you could give him a chance where he like had to shoulder a guy for position on the run. Those are the two things. Like, he wasn't getting beat at any point. So it was like the fact that he got up and connected with the cross was like, of course. And he, as you said, he hits it across the net, which is like, it's such a brilliant play to make. And Fry is there for it. Crazy.
Yeah. And like, especially, I think because a couple minutes before that, Ricketts has another chance where he just like kind of hits it off the side of his foot. Like, it's a volley. And I think he hit it off the side of his foot and it misses the net by like half an inch. And it was just like, just frustrating.
Unfortunately, we get to one of the cruelest things in sports, truthfully. A penalty shootout to decide the title, still to this day, even knowing what happens the next year and even knowing how it plays out. Man, just gut-wrenching to watch penalties for in such a huge spot.
I'm glad you said, like, rewatching the game today in preparation for recording this, rewatching the penalties, still you could still feel like tension from it.
Sickening.
It's an awful thing to watch in person. Oh my God.
Altidore scores. Seattle answers. Bradley misses. Seattle scores 2-1. Shaver scores. And Alvaro Fernandez misses his in the third, which ties it at 2-2. And they match. Everybody scores the next two, Johnson and Moore for Toronto, and two goals for Seattle. So we get 4-4 through five kickers, and we are down to sudden death, and Justin Morrow hits the crossbar.
A strike of the left foot and a strike of the crossbar from Justin Morrow, and Seattle now with a chance to win. Just leaning back a little bit too much, praying for it to come down, going off the bar. Fortunate for him, it bounces a yard. If Torres scores, Seattle will be champions. It's Torres! From worst to first, a team transformed in mid-season. Seattle crowned champions for the first time.
I feel like that was one of the penalties are weird in person because there's so little time to react, but so much time to dwell. Like, you could, after Morrow hit the crossbar, the whole building went quiet. But then it was like the building realized they had to cheer on Clint Irwin to try and make the save. And it's just it was such like a defeating thing. It was so weird. It's very strange. Like,
yeah,
kicks in person, especially in a final, is very strange.
No, I think you articulated that well, because it was sort of like, because of the fact that nobody was running away with it and there wasn't anything dominant, and Seattle hadn't scored at all and hadn't taken a shot, to your point, hadn't taken any shots on goal. There was sort of this feeling, hard to describe, but this feeling that like once if Seattle did get an edge, it was going to be the defining edge.
Yeah.
And it ends up the only edge they get the entire game is at the end of the sixth penalty kick. Truly excruciating.
Yeah, it was. We rode the TTC, the bus back up. Because they had buses running through the X. Kind of up, I guess it would have been up Strawn. And it was like the most, like, because it was like TFC diehards are waiting for this forever. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, it was the saddest fucking, like, people were in the concourse just crying. It was crazy. It was a wild, wild thing to be a part of.
I almost missed the thing about the awesome TIFO, which is a giant banner that was revealed. I believe it was nothing more powerful than a club whose time has come, something like that.
Yeah.
It was super cool. It was super, super, super cool.
Yeah, and like we didn't talk about like the march to the building with all the supporters was very cool. It was a really fun day, to be honest, until the actual match.
I'll tell you though, Jake, when something like this happens, there are, of course, a myriad of possibilities that the team can react from. And one of the ways that they can react is by coming back and having one of the best seasons that the league has ever seen, certainly the best season the franchise has ever seen, and to answer by doubling down and getting right back to the spot and getting vengeance. And Toronto FC would set out to do just that. We will talk about the beginning of the 2017 season next week on Sports Felt Storytime.